Hi, welcome to the Shallow Dive on the Daf Yomi. I hope you enjoy.
Let's start on Side Dalet Amid Beis, 11 lines down. Tan Rabbanan. Hagazlonin, Amadei Beribis. Those who steal and lend with interest. Shechziru. They want to make restitution, return what they've stolen. Ein mekablim mehen. The victim should not receive this restitution. Ein mekablim mehen, and one who does accept, ein ruach chachamim nochemenu. The spirit of the sages is not pleased with such action. Such a person is not following the spirit of what the chachamim want. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bimei Rabbi Nishnas Mishnazu. Rabbi Yochanan says this teaching was initiated in the days of Rabbi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Titanya, as was taught in a Braisa, Maisa Badum Echad, a story, there's one person, Shibikish Lasos Tshuva, Chiddush, he wanted to do Tshuva. Amar Lei Ishto, his wife said to him, Reka, empty one. Imato is a tshuva. If you do tshuva, you're going to return to God. Afilo avneit ena shelcha. Even your belt is not yours. You're a professional thief. If you want to do tshuva, you're supposed to return that which you stole. And then you're not going to be left with anything. So she says that's a terrible idea. Tshuva. It's very expensive. V'nimna. So he listened to his wife, and he held back from doing tshuva. V'lo asa tshuva. And he did not end up doing tshuva. Be'osa shah amru. At that time, they said, Chachamim, Hagazlonim, Malvei Ribios, Shehichziru, robbers, and those who lend with interest, that are coming to return, to make restitution for that which they took, in mekabel mehen, those who were stolen from or laid out the interest should not receive the compensation in return, the restitution in return. Ve'amekabel mehen ein ruach chachamim nochemen, and one who does receive that which is offered, the spirit of the sages is not pleased from them. Rashi says, "Ein ruach chachamim nochemenu, ein ruach chachma v'chasidus bekirbo," which is interesting interpretation. The spirit of wisdom and piety is not inside of him. Meaning, even though this was a new development in the times of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Before that, there was no such klal. But with this new change, that there's an added impediment from those who wanted to do tshuva, it became harder for them. That was the metzias. So he tried, was held back. But somebody who has ruach chachma b'chassidus, akoponim, after the Chachamim gave that guidance, so they will follow through with this directive to ensure that people have the ability to do tshuva without added hindrance. Meise. I have a question. Hichle maviem maos, if orphans received money as an inheritance from their father, shal ribis, this money came from interest that he collected illegally. Afalpi shehein yodin shein ribis, even though the orphans know that this money came from illicit funds collected from usury, interest, ein chayav lahachzir, they are not required to make restitution and return it to those who paid it out. Enu hudelo. Dirkes, it is the orphans. They do not have to. Ha aviem, but if it's the father, chayv lahachzir. The implication is that he himself is required to make restitution. V'din hu davim nami eno chayv lahachzir. Really, by the law, it should be the same. But the father also does not have a requirement to return it. V'ha diktani v'did hu, and that which is taught concerning the orphans, them, mishom, the kaboy lemisne, seifa. That is an order to fit in line with what is necessary, the intention to be taught in the conclusion of this teaching, iniach lemaviyam, para, vitalis, that if the father left over as an inheritance bequeathed to them a cow or a shawl, kol davar mesuyim, anything that is precise, that object itself, chayav lahachzir, they are required to return it. If it was some type of contraband, mipnei kvod aviyam, because of the honor of their father. Tanarei shenami bididhu, mipnei kvod aviyam chayav lahachzir. Therefore, since we're going to say in the seifa, on the conclusion, that in a case when there's the object itself here, the cow or the talis, that they are required to return it to the one who was stolen from in order to preserve the honor and ensure the honor of their father. So therefore, in the Reisha, in the introduction also, it was taught concerning the orphans, but really it equally applies to the father. And the father is also not required to give back ribis. See Rashi. Ein chayav in lahachzir, d'chsi v'heshev tzagzeh asher gaza. V'hani lo gaza midi. The Torah requires the one who stole to return that which he stole. And these, the orphans, they didn't steal anything. K'nin b'shinu rishos. It has been acquired to them by a transfer of domain. This is controversial. K'sav rishos yerish k'rishos lokeach domain. This opinion presented is of the opinion that the domain of the inheritor is considered like the domain of a purchaser, that it's a different domain. Hamasuim, dovar hanikir l'rabbi, something that is recognizable to the broader public. Zuhi shegazo ploni, oh, that's the cow that guy who died, that he stole. Minich le'yoshef, and he's left it over, bequeathed it to his inheritors. So in order to preserve the honor of their father, they're required to restore it to the victim. Back in the Gemara, Gemara's going to push back on that. With nei kvod avim chayav lahachzir, and in order to honor their father, are they actually required to return it? Ekri kan, I'll read over here, as relevant to this case, v'nasiv amcha losar, and the prince in your nation shall not curse. V'osem ayis amcha. The drasha is, which is this nasi v'amcha losar? That's the nasi, that is the prince, who acts like your nation. The prince in your nation, the one who acts like your nation. Rashi, v'osa ma'isa amcha, v'zeh lo osa ma'isa amo, this fellow, this robber, did not act like his nation, v'ein achayav l'chvado, and they're not required to honor him. K'da'amar of Pinchas, so Pinchas is explaining what's the context of this teaching, v'sha'osa tshuva. The case over here is when the father did tshuva before he died. Enachanami. Really, if he did not do tshuva, he's not osa maisa amcha. Rashi says, they're not chayev in his honor. They don't have to return it in order to honor their father. Their father was a scoundrel. He was a robber. He didn't do tshuva. He didn't repent. So they're not required to honor him. So it seems. So Rashi says explicitly. And therefore, the Gemara brings Rav Pinchas to give us a new context here. The father did do tshuva. And that's why they're required, the inheritors are required to make restitution, to restore this stolen cow, davar mesuyim, to the victim. The father did do tshuva. Achanami b'shasa tshuva. So, if he did tshuva, he asa tshuva, I mean, here as well, we're talking about where there's tshuva. He asa tshuva my boy gabe. Fine. So, even though he was a Rasha, now he did tshuva, there are mechuyvim in his kavod. But if he did tshuva, why is the money, or this cow, still by him? He should have returned it. There's a mitzvah in the Torah. He should have returned it. Doesn't sound like he did so much tshuva. The Gemara answers, boy, did I do it? He should have returned it. Shelo hifsig hispik lahachzir at shemes. He didn't have enough time to actually return it before he died. So he did tshuva. He felt terrible. He was planning on returning it. And punkt, right before he was able to return it, he dropped dead. So that's the case when it's a davar mesuyim that the yorshim are mipnei kvod avihem chayavim lahachzir. They are, in order to honor their father, obligated to return it. Tashma. Hagazloin umalvi ribis. Robbers and those who lend on interest. Af al pi shegavu achzirin. Even though they have collected, they should return it. Gazlonin mai shegavu. We're talking about robbers. What does it mean that they collected? Mai shegavu ika. How is that relevant? E gazel. Gazel. If they stole, they have what was stolen. Vi lo gazel. Lo gazel. They didn't steal, so they didn't steal. Ela emo hagazlonin. Rather say that we're referring to those who are robbers. But what is the case? Who are they? Malvi ribios, those who lend out with interest. Afal pi shegavu mazir, even though they have collected the interest, they're required to return it. Amri mazirin, meaning so that's a question on this teaching that. If they're trying to do tshuva, shechzir, we said earlier, ein mekablin mehen. So we're pushing back. Amen machzirin, ein mekablin mehen. They're told to return it, but they should make the offer to return it. But the victim who paid the interest should not receive it. Elo lama machzirin, latzis tzedei shamayim. So if so, why are they encouraged to offer it in order to discharge the requirement in heaven? So when they offer it and the victim says, just keep it, he's mochel, he forgives the debt. So it's as though it was returned and he has fulfilled his mitzvah of returning that which he stole. Toshma. Coming here, Haroim v'Hagavoyin v'Hamochsin Chuvasan Kasha. The shepherds and those who collect, Rashi says, Haroim is Gazlonim Heim, Liros Behemos Sazachirim. These shepherds are pasturing in other people's fields. And the Gavoyim are collectors. Rashi says, Shel Melech Livos Kasef, Gulgalta Vernona, Shak Bitve. They collect a tax, a head tax, or a property tax, and they take too much. Ve'amochsin, and other tax collectors, Shuvas and Kasha, their return is challenging. It's hard for them. Umarzirin, Lamakirin. They took from so many people. And she said, Shuvas and Kasha, Shigazlu Harabim, they stole from the public. They Yodim, Lamila Hachzir. They don't know who to return to. So they should return to those that they recognize. Marzirin, Lamakirin, Lami, Shemakir, Shalo, Shigazlu. Whoever they recognize they stole from him, they should return to him. Amri Marzirin, Vemekab Mahen. Ah, we said that they're just meant to make the offer, but the victim should not receive it. They should forgive this requirement. Ve'alama Marzirin. And if so, why bother with making this offer? Well, it's a Sidei Shamayim. In order to discharge their requirement, the hands of heaven. Yihachi, am I tshuva sam kasha? If so, why are we saying that their tshuva is so hard? What's special about these fellows? They make an offer where they know, they get to keep it. Where they don't know, they don't know. Ve'od, and further, ema seifa. The seifa is even more challenging. V'she'en makirin, what about who they don't know about? They know they stole from the rabbin, from the community at large. What do they do beyond that which they know about? They should take the money that they assess that they have stolen with, that amount of money they've stolen, and employ that money towards public works. Make cisterns and pits, wells, different storage, different things that can be used by the public. And that's what they should do with it. They should actually shell out the money to help the public. Put in a water fountain in the park, something like that. Ella lo kasha. Rather, it's not a difficulty. Kan kadam takana. Kan lacha takana. This teaching does not fit with the mandate to dissuade the victims from receiving compensation. But it's taught what they should do before we had this takana, to make the way for their tshuva easier. And after the takana from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, then we wouldn't say that. The hashta de amar of Nachman, v'she'ein gzeila kayemes. Now the Rabbi Nachman said a different distinction. When the object that was stolen is not actually still here. Afilu tema idi la'achat takana. Now you can say that both teachings are after the takana. Lo kasha, and it's still not a challenge. They're both compatible. Kan tegzela kayemes, kan b'shein gzela kayemes. If the gzela, that which is stolen, is here, then he should return it, make restitution. And if it's not here, so then they gave him a leniency, a kula, and said that it shouldn't be so hard for him to have to pay out of pocket for that which he stole. So they made the way easier for him and encouraged the victims to not accept restitution. But according to Rav Nachman, if the object itself is here, they're supposed to return. Which is a little bit challenging because the case of the roeh, for example, I'm talking about a shepherd, he's grazing. What are they going to return? Right, the bits of grass? Right, well, shuvas and kasha, it's after the takana. A little bit shver. Like upon him, in a general sense, those who steal, it's an example, those who steal from the public. So then the Gemara poses another kasha. V'ha avnet d'gzeila kayemesi. If we recall back to the story, the original Baal Tshuva movement that didn't get off the ground, the guy wanted to do tshuva. That's why I said, oh, are you crazy? You're going to do tshuva, you're going to be nothing left. You're not even going to have your belt. So that was the avnet, he had a belt. And that was the catalyst for the whole takana. So if you say, oh, you got to return the belt, because that's ba'en, that's right here, so then that doesn't really help very much. My avnit, so then we're understanding, according to Rav Nachman, what is the story with this belt? The me'avnit. We're not talking about the belt, we're talking about the financial value of the belt. Chol hecha digzela kayemes, lo av rabbanan takanta, and anywhere that the object that was stolen is still here, rabbanan did not make a takana, did not make this enactment to facilitate the tshuva, make it easier for him to do tshuva, vare marish, is that really true? What about the case of a beam? Digzela kayemesi, the guy stole a beam, built it into his house, it's still here. See the beam right there. Utanam, and it's tatana mishnah. Ala morish hagazel shibanu bebira. Somebody built in a beam that was stolen into his palace. Sheyitol doma. He should take the money and make restitution with that. He doesn't have to break his palace, even though the beam is right there. It doesn't seem like he is required to give back the object itself. Netikal zashovin. Because of this sakana, because of this enactment, to facilitate those who want to do tshuva, that they should be able to do so. Shani asum, that case is different. Given the ikar of seida, debira, since taking out this beam is going to cause a loss, it's destructive to the palace. Shavu rabbanon kidalesa. The rabbanon considered it as though it's not here. Although, yes, when he looks up, he sees this beam across the ceiling that was stolen, but extracting it would be destructive. So therefore, they view it, the sages saw it, as though it weren't here. In such a case, they said it's ke'ilu, it's not here, and therefore, the takan is in effect. Let's go back to the first wide line, and the line before that, on Sagdalat Ambeis, to examine this a little bit more. The idea that the Yorshim, the inheritors, have an obligation to honor their father. The father died, and bequeathed these stolen items. He said, if it's a davar masuyim, they're required, it's something that's known, like a cow, they're required to return it to the victims of the theft, in order to honor their father, meaning not at the letter of the law. The letter of the law, as Rashi said, is considered a shinui rishus, according to this opinion. It's a deviation of domain, and with a new domain, so they would acquire it by right. But to honor their father, they're required to restore it to the victim. Agamar says, what kavod? Why are they required to honor their father? Agrikan, why don't I read here? Nasi ba'amcha lo sa'or. Umar says, ba'osa ma'isa amcha. So this prohibition, not cursing the prince in your nation, is the prince that acts like your nation, keeps the Torah. Osa ma'isa amcha. That's who is subject to the protections of kavod, the requirement of kavod. That's what the Gemara seems to be presenting. Rashi says so explicitly. And this father who died, they're not obligated to honor him. The sons who inherit are not required to honor him. That's what Rashi says. That's what it seems the Gemara seems to be saying. If you look at the Rambam, in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Hey, Halacha Yudbeis, Mi shahayu aviv ve'imo rashaim gemurim, somebody whose father and mother were entirely wicked, ve'ovrei averus, and transgressors of sins. I'm not sure what the Rambam's adding. We're already talking about rashaim gemurim, entirely wicked. And by the way, they'll add a feather in their cap, they also transgress sins. I'm not really sure what he wants, but they're really, really bad people. Afilu nigbar dinam lariga. Even if they are judged to be killed, so the court has ruled they're liable to death, v'hem yotzin liharig, they're on their way out to be killed, capital punishment. Asur l'lakoson l'kalam, he is prohibited from striking them or cursing them. V'im kilel o chava b'hen potter. So it's a gray zone. He's not allowed to, but if he did, he's exempt from liability. That's special halacha by the sun. Other people, the Rambam says, v'im asu tshuva, if the parents did tshuva, then the child, who's obviously an adult, over bar bas mitzvah, would be liable to capital punishment for striking, causing a wound to the parent, or cursing the parent. V'ne'agalein, I have a party. Parents are on the way getting killed. One of the children hits, curses, after they did vidui, like they're supposed to. They did shuva. The children curse or strike. Oh, take them out also. They're also chayv misa. V'ne'agalein, afalpi sharein yotzel misa. Even though the parents are on their way out to be killed, if they did tshuva, then they're back in business. And they have the full protection. Even if they didn't do tshuva, it's still aser. If they did do tshuva, then there's full liability. B'medvar morim b'beno. That's talking about by the son. Aval acher shebaviko. Somebody else sees this guy on his way out to be killed. Strikes him. Must have done some crime. Somebody's angry. Fine. Not allowed to. L'chera, o kilo, achash nigmar dino. Aval bisha asa tshuva. Even though the criminal did do tshuva, he confessed, he repented, he cried, he has remorse for what he's done. Still, the one who curses or strikes him is exempt, is not liable. Hoel v'hu holech l'misa, because he's on his way to death. V'im bisho chaya b'knas ha'mevayish. If they embarrass, so there is the requirement to pay embarrassment. So we do find the Rambam is presenting a chiluk and focusing on the relationship between parents and children here. The Rambam presents a prohibition to strike. Even if they are Rishayim, he just says they're exempt. Doesn't say mutter. Although, to be fair, the Lashon Potter is used also in the end by Acherim. But here in the beginning he says, Asur lo la'akoson u'lekalalo. Doesn't say that that's applicable to everybody, but I'll go upon him. Rambam is explicit that for the children, they are never ever allowed to strike or curse their parents. If they are Rishayim, Gemurim, and Ovrei Averus, then they'll be exempt from capital punishment on account of this transgression of striking or cursing. And if the parents did tshuva, then there's full liability. This is not applicable to other people. Other people, once the person has the Gemar Din, he's on his way to get killed, other people will be exempt. It's a little bit ambiguous if they are permitted or prohibited. It doesn't say explicitly, but they certainly are exempt. When looking at the din of Klala, earlier in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Nasi ba'amcha lo sa'ar, so Rambam writes, Perek Chavav, Halacha Beis, Hamakal es hameis poter. If one curses someone who is dead, he's exempt. Hoy makal kol adam Yisrael chayev. And if one has cursed any person from Israel, he is liable. Lama yichad lo lav ledain, lav lenasi. L'chaibashtayim. Torah isolates and identifies specific prohibitions for a judge or the prince, a king, to add additional violations. Nimsus lama. Comes out that we learn. Shemakal echam Yisrael, one who curses any member of the nation of Israel, bein ish, bein isha, whether man or woman, bein gadol, bein katan, whether an adult or a minor, look, he gets lashes for this violation. Achas, one set of lashes. Vim kilel dayin, and if the member of the nation that he cursed was a judge, lokeshtayim, you'll get two sets of lashes. Vim kilel nasi, and if he cursed a prince, you'll get three sets of lashes. Uben nasi, and the son of the prince, the son of the king, Shekil Abib, who cursed his father, Chai Mishum Arba Shemos, he will get four lashes for four different categories. Shlosha Shekol Adam, three that would apply to anyone else who strikes this person, who is a member of Klal Yisrael, who is a Dayan and a Nasi, so three Shemos. And in addition, he has a fourth shame, Achas Mishum Av, Mishum Ha'av. On this, the Radvaz asks a question. He quotes the Torah's Kohanim. V'lo yizhir Torah ela al haksherim. Sh'ne'emar v'nasi ba'amcha lo sa'or. V'osam ha'is ha'amcha. Nikos Maimonides quotes this. T'masi loma hishmit rabbeinu ze mekan. Why does the Rambam omit this very important qualifier? That who is subject, which person, member in Yisrael, are we talking about? Ba'osu ma'isa amcha. So Pala, Radvaz says, why didn't the Rambam tell us? So, yesh lefarish, that we can't explain, that he didn't mention it over there because it's not so simple. There's a prohibition. Even if he's not osu ma'isa amcha, according to the Rambam, in the case of the son being Makala. And by others, he says they're exempt. It's ambiguous. Maybe there's a prohibition, maybe there's not. There certainly is an exemption from liability that one could learn perhaps either way. If you learn either way, so there's an exemption from punishment, but it's prohibited. So that's why the Rambam didn't mention, that's the cleanest way to learn, so to speak, he didn't mention that it needs to be osu ma'isa amcha, because he didn't pass it that way. He doesn't fully make the prohibition dependent on that element, that the person who's being cursed is a fully upstanding member of the Jewish people, who keeps the Torah, strives to keep the Torah. No. Somebody who's not osu ma'isa amcha, there's an exemption from liability. Maybe it's prohibited. Regardless, that is certainly the case by a son. At the very minimum, because that's true by the son, and this halacha is talking about sons as well, so he doesn't mention it because it's complicated. Again, more cleanly, one could just say it's only a limitation for punishment that would even apply to the son. Perhaps there's a prohibition even for a non-son. Al Kopanim, that doesn't seem to fit so easily with our Gemara. Our Gemara does seem to present an exemption of Menasa Ba'am Chalosa'ar as presenting no requirement to honor the father. And the Rambam doesn't seem to pass in that way. In Hilchos Mamon, Perek Vav, Halacha Yud Aleph, a mamzer chayav b'chvod aviv, umara. A mamzer is liable, required to honor his father and fear him. Ve'afal pi shehu pater, al makaso ve'al kalalaso, ad shiyaseh tshuva. Even though he's not liable to punishment if he strikes or curses his father, until his father does tshuva, shafil haya aviv rasha ubal averus, he doesn't say rasha gamor, but he's also, not just a rasha, also bal averus, wicked and a master of sins. A slightly different nusach. In Mamrim He Yud Beis, we had Rashaim Gemurim V'Ovrei Averus. So here, less focus on the Rasha, a little heavier on Averus, Baal Averus instead of Ovrei Averus. Regardless, what is the Rambam's psak? Mechabdo U'Misyar Mimenu. The father is a Rasha, is a wicked person. The son is required to fear and honor him. That's the psak of the Rambam. So there is kavod. Mechabdo. Rosh Maimonides says, "Ken mashma she'ad shelo asa tshuva pater emor mechavado." He disagrees, and the Torah as well disagrees. Like we saw, Rashi explains the Gemara. There's no chiv kavod. The son is not required to honor his father, who has passed, if he has not done tshuva. Says the Torah, Yerdea, Simon Reish Mem, Sifyotes, Afilu haya aviv rasha ubal averus. Even if his father is wicked and a master of sins, Mechadu misyar memenu, he has to honor him and have awe from him. That is the Rama. He starts in the beginning of the Lacha, Kasav Rama. Vinir Ali, says the Torah, would appear to me, given Shu Rasha, since the father is wicked, Eino Chaya Bechvodo, he's not required to honor him. Karamina Gabi, Niech Lema Vim Paragzula, by Argamara. Argamara says, if their father left over for them, bequeathed to them a stolen cow, Chayav Mlehasher, Mipne Kvara Vim, they're required to return it because of the honor of their father. Uparech, Gemara has a kasha. And this father did not act in the manner of your nation. He was wicked. Pirish, v'en chayav mechvodo, as we saw in Rashi, and they're not required to honor him. Mishani Gemara answers, kisha asa tshuva. The case is they are required to honor him. He did tshuva. Amakos man shelo asa tshuva, ein chayav mechvodo. So that implies the Gemara is sticking with its hanacha. Bottom line of the Gemara is, if he did not do tshuva, the father did not do tshuva, they're not mechuyev, the sons are not obligated to honor him. So the Tur paskins against the Rambam, quotes the Rambam, disagrees. Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam, and the Rama paskins like the Tur, like Rashi. As a Radvaz, it tries to defend the Rambam. He says, "Yesh l'taretz, the house ma'ari kishemeis blo tshuva." What is the case of the Gemara, our Gemara, that the Galban base? The father died without doing tshuva. The shuv lo yuchol, the sakin es asher enso. He's finished. He can't repair his crookedness. He hasn't done tshuva because he died and he's out of business. Aval hocha. But here, where the Rambam says there is an obligation for the son to honor his father who's wicked, we're talking about where the father's alive. And there's always hope. He could do tshuva at the last minute. And then, if he does do tshuva, his original sins will not be recalled. And it comes out that if the father is the biggest criminal you can imagine, whole life, and then the son says, "Why shan't I you? You're wicked. You're not osam aysa amcha." And then, on his deathbed, claps al chait, "So sorry, terrible mistakes," sheds a tear, sincere. Then, it comes out every time that the son didn't honor his father, instead said, "Drop dead," or whatever. Didn't honor him. So he's chayv l'mafreya, and he was mevatel the mitzvah of kibud av em l'mafreya, since the sins are not recalled after he did tshuva. So it comes out that the son retroactively, it's a chiddush, the Ravaz is saying, to explain the Rama. Retroactively, we view the father as not a sinner, and therefore the son, why don't we retroactively view the son as just been shogeg? I don't know, why are we going to slam the son retroactively? At the time, the guy was a Rasha. But there was tikva. The whole time there was hope. Since there was the whole time there was hope, so the son should have had that hope that the father would do tshuva. Since he didn't, so he's over. Nimsa ben over, over la mafreya. V'dover borer, shechay mitztar. V'ameis, gam, sinoso, gam kinoso, kvar avdo. Quotes from Koheles, that in life, there's sensitivity, but by death, his hatred and his jealousies, it's all lost. Once the father died in his wickedness, then there's no further anticipation. After tshuva, he already died. It's too late. So then there's no chiyuv. That's the case of our Gemara. But the Rambam will say there is a chiyuv kavod in the lifetime of the father. That's Rav Vaz's teretz. Which, interesting idea, very interesting idea. It's a little bit hard to understand why the Rambam paskins, according to Rav, the exemption that we saw in Mamrim Hey Yud Beis, that if the parents are on the way out to being executed, capital crime, they're convicted, the son strikes or curses, so he's exempt from liability. It is prohibited for him to do so. He's exempt from liability. And if the father does tshuva or mother does tshuva, then there is full liability for the son or daughter. It doesn't seem to fit so easily with the way the Ravaz doesn't seem to fit so easily with the way the Rambam is learning. The Rambam seems to be giving a new status to the son, differentiating between prohibition and liability. That seems to be the Rambam's learning. Yesh mechalkim, some differentiate between bizayon aviv and kavod. But we see over here that the Rambam is saying, akoponim, that the Pashas the Rambam, that there is a chiv kavod, straight kavod. So, not so pashut how to read the Rambam. Perhaps he's not passing like this sugya. Perhaps, like the Ravaz is saying, that there's a difference between a chiyuv mechayim and a ptur mimaves. A possibility. The Pella de Kazar, it says, Lavan Arami Zerasha. He needs no introduction. And Azar says that Rachel was punished for being mitzarehim by stealing the trophim. That she died and she wasn't able to raise her son Binyamin. It's an onish. She's caused her father tzar. She's mechuyev to be mechavidim. She wasn't mechavidim enough. Can you read? Efshe is a chilek between tsar and kavod. Efshe, but al koponim, it's a tremendous chiddush. He's a rasha. According to Ravaz, that mechayim, there's a chiyuv. That's very good. She has to have a hope that he's going to do tshuva. But lo shemanu, that he did tshuva in the end. Right away, we see that she's nenash. So it's a pella, meaning even if he didn't end up doing tshuva, the Tzar holds her accountable. We don't say, wait until. Find out if he did tshuva later. She died right away. L'char before Levin dies. Not b'tshuva. It's still a rasha. Al kol panim, The Parsha Pshat of the Sugya, L'chera, is like Rashi and the Tur and the Ramah, that there's no Chiv Kavod if he's not Osa Mais Amcha. That's the Parsha Pshat. According to the Rambam, perhaps it could be Mechalik, again, the Rivaz, whether he's alive or dead. Yes, Chiyuv, on the hope that he'll do tshuva. In this case, there's no Chiyuv because the father's already died. Or perhaps it could be Mechalik between mitzvah and liability. And this is considered like a liability. Maybe one could say that. The same way that the Rambam paskins that the son is not allowed to strike his father as a rasha, but is exempt from punishment, he's not liable. So the prohibition is in effect, but the liability for violation is not in effect. So perhaps one could say that the payment that is a totsah of kavod is viewed as a liability. And that there's no liability. And Chanami is mechuyev to memchaber. Stand up. Offer him, make you a tea. Put on his coat for him. Those type of things. Walk with him. But to have to shell out money, maybe that's considered a liability. Maybe that's that we don't say. He's not going to get an onesh. He doesn't have to shell out money in order to be mechaber him. Perhaps. Perhaps. Mysterious Rambam. Continuing in the Gemara, by Haman Aleph, by the two dots. Gozal para mu'uberes v'yalda echulu. Take a look at the Mishnah, first Mishnah, so again, with the base at the top. Hagozal eitzim v'asan kelim, sem v'asan v'godim, shalom kishasek zela. Somebody stole wood, turned them into vessels, or wool, and turn them into garments. The robber is required to pay the victim based on the value at the time it was stolen. And now, focusing on the next part of the Mishnah, Gazal para mu'uberes. If the robber stole a pregnant cow, v'yolda, and it gave birth, Rachel te'una v'gazza. If he stole a sheep that had wool on it, and he sheared it, Meshalim to make part of a beres. Ha'omedes leilid. He needs to pay the value of a cow that was ready to give birth. That's what he stole. To make rochel omedes ligazes, and the value of a sheep that was ready to be sheared. Pelzapar of this abra etzlo, if he stole a cow and it became pregnant by him, by the thief, v'yolda, Rachel, and then it gave birth by him. Rachel tuna v'nitana etzlo v'gaza. If he stole a sheep that did not have any wool on it, and then the wool grew by the robber, and then he sheared it, Meshalim k'shasek zela. He pays like the value at the time of stealing. Zeklal, this is the rule. Kol ha'gazlanin meshalim k'shasek zela. All those who rob pay like the value at the time of the robbery. Go back to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. At Gozel, Rachel, the sages said, if somebody steals a lamb, or a ewe, Yegazaza, and sheared it, Para Vialda, cow, and it gave birth, Mishalim Osa, he pays it back, pays it, ve'es yizaseh, and he also adds to the compensation the wool that was shorn, ve'es vladoseh, and the vlados, whatever it gave birth to. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says the gazlan has to pay back everything. Rabbi Yehuda omer, gzeil chazeres be'ena. Rabbi Yehuda says that which is stolen goes back as it is. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Roen Osa, Ki'ilu Hishuma Eslo B'Kesef. Rabbi Shimon says, you see it as though it was assessed, evaluated by him as money. See Rashi. Mishal Mosav Esk is a set. Kol ma shenotal mimeno u'ma sheshbicha. Rabbi Meir says he has to give back what was stolen and anything that accrued, any additional value that developed since then. Gzela chazer zbeina kimo shehi achshav. The stolen item goes back as it is now. Rekonis empty. Echzirena. V'had mishal zmei gizos. V'ober. Kimo shai v'shasik zela. And then he makes compensation for the value if it was more valuable than it is now at the time it was stolen. V'lo shevach ha'gizah sheshbicha esla. But not the additional value that accrued once he stole it. Lo shevach v'lad. D'lo konis Reb Yehuda. Av adomish v'shasik zela v'shalem. D'lek l'man d'omar kol gazonim. Batsim v'shasik zela v'shalem. Nobody holds that the thief has to pay less than what it was worth at the time of what was stolen. So if it's worth less now, he's got to make additional compensation to get the value of what he's returning up to the value that was stolen. And then the third, Rabbi Shimon. Ruan osa ki ilu hi shuma esla b'kesef, mishasek zela, from the time that it was stolen, mishalim domim ki shasek zela, he pays the money like the value that this animal had at the time it was stolen. Lukamon mefarish ma'i pligi. In what element are they disagreeing? Rabbi Shimon. They seem to be similar. Boilu. Back to the Gemara. Ma'i taima derbi Meir. Let us dig in to understand what is the rationale for Rabbi Meir. Shem dekasovar shinu b'mkoma omeg. Does he hold that a change is insignificant? It's Makoma Omid, it stays in its place. And that's why everything must be returned. The cow, the calves that are born, the lamb, as the ewe, as well as the sheep, as well as the wool that grew, everything. We view that change as insignificant. Odilma, Be'alma Shinakon. Or perhaps, maybe Rabbi Meir holds, that in general, this change affects a transaction, an acquisition for the robber. It is a change that's significant. And in this case, the reason why the robber is required to pay back so much is as a fine. Throw the book at him. Don't steal. Don't be chote niskar. Don't gain from your iniquity. L'mayin afkamina. What's the difference between the two possibilities? L'hecha d'kochasha nechash. There is a difference in the case where instead of it going up in value, if it got weakened, it goes down in value. So if you say that it's a knas, if it's a knas, he's going to have to pay the value from what it was originally. And if you say the first idea, shinu b'mekom omeg, so then he'll just give it back the way it is, even though he's not fully compensating the victim at the value of what was stolen. He's going to get a discount. Let's see Rashi. Knas akonis. Is it a fine? Shelo yehi choti niskar v'gzela, that the sinner should not benefit from what he stole. Litol esasha, to take the accrued value from the time of theft. In afkamina, what is the difference between the two possibilities in Shitas Rabbi Meir? Whether shina b'mkoma omed or knasa knas. Lehecha delo hishbicha. An afkamina is going to be found in a case where it did not increase its value. Where it increased in value, so he's got to pay the extra, doesn't matter what the reason is. But if it didn't go up in value, ela kachsha, rather it got weaker, yeah, time of mishum, If you see the reason that the mayor says everything goes back is because there's not a significant change, then just goes back the weaker animal as it is now. We don't say there's a significant change when it's beefed up, when there's extra wool or extra vlados, calves or lambs. Everything goes back. If you say the reason why he's got to give everything back is as a fine, and really a change does affect an acquisition for the robber, he acquired and he's got to pay the value from the inception. He'll have to pay extra. Toshma. So try and resolve this question, which we said there's an afkmina within Shitas Rabbi Meir. Gazal behema v'iskina, if somebody stole an animal and then it got old, avad v'iskina, slaves, and then they got old, v'shalom kishas egzela, he pays back like the value at the time of the theft. Rabbi Meir omer, ba'avadim omer lo harishul chavanah. Rabbi Meir says, by slaves, he says to him, to the owner, the victim, behold, what's yours is before you. Here's your slave. Ve'ilu behema kishas egzela. But by the animal, he has to make restitution at the value from the time of theft. Ve'isakadaita sav Rabbi Meir shinu b'mkom omid. And if you would think that the opinion of Rabbi Meir that we saw earlier, everything goes back, is predicated on shinu b'mkom omid, no substantial difference, afilu behema nami, then he should not have differentiated. He should have said even by the animal that he stole and then it got old, he should have said over there also. That's similar to kachasha, got weaker. And he should have said there as well that it's kishasa, that he just gives it back. Just like the evet, just give it back. And he doesn't say that. He says he has to pay, because Kishasik Zayl has got to pay extra. Elalav Shmamina, rather not, is it not that we can derive from here, Kesav Rebeir, Shinu Konet, that there is a change that affects an acquisition for the robber. V'ha'ha Knasu Dekakonis. And here, it's a fine that the robber is fined. And that's why, by the Behema, he must pay extra. Omri, you could answer back, another interpretation, they'll say, Rabbi Meir, the Devrem, the Rabban Kama. Rabbi Meir is not really saying his own opinion, but rather responding to the Rabbanan. He's answering them, Rabbanan Kama Luhu. What is he saying to them? Leididi Shinui Ein Konet. According to me, a change is not effective. It's not going to affect an acquisition for me, for the thief. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Afilu Behema Nami. And even for the animal. Ela l'dichu. But according to you, d'amrisu shinukona, you do hold that a change will affect a transfer of ownership. Odu l'mias, you should at least admit to me, the avda, the case of the slave, that it's like real property. Kakein and exelas. And real property is not subject to a kinyan exela, subject to the violation of the prohibition. And an evet is hukash tekaka, it's similar and treated equivalent to real property. So say that just as kaka ain't an exelus, the evet is ain't an exelus, no kin in exela. Rabbanan, you should agree to me, says Rabbi Meir in this alternate version. He's not presenting his own opinion. He's saying, you should agree to me by the case of evet. But amir Rabbanan, lo abduk metalte domi. Rabbanan disagree. They said, no, an evet is not like Kaka, but rather, he is like Metaphilin. And therefore, we don't say there's no Kinin Zela by the Evet. So we didn't have a proof here. We presented a proof, and we were Madcha the proof. We still have the outstanding question, what is Shitas Rabbi Meir? Why does he say that all the accrued value must be restored? We're not sure. And again, the nafkamina is when it goes down in value. We're still not sure if Shitas Rabbi Meir. Will that need to go back the full value of what he stole, or can he just get away with returning this weaker version of that which he stole? Toshma. We're trying to bring another proof. Mitzvah lo adam, tzava shachar. If somebody presented to an artisan who engages in dyeing, he said, I want this to be dyed red, and instead he dyed it black. Shachar tzava adam, or the reverse. Rabbi Meir omer nosan lo dmei tzimro. Rabbi Meir says, the value of the wool must be restored. He's got to pay him back for this mistake. Mitz Mimro in Ramadaik. He has to pay back the value of the wool. Mitz Mimro Bishvacho lo. But he doesn't have to pay the additional value of the Shevach, of the enhanced value. That he doesn't have to return. V'isakadaitach sabar Meir shinui ein kona. And if you would think that Rav Meir's position is that a change does not affect an acquisition, so it's he should be required to compensate him not only for the raw wool, but also for the accrued value now that it's dyed. Rather not derived from here, that Rav Meir holds that the change in the object does affect an acquisition. And over here, why did we say, in our case, that the robber has to give restitution, not only return the animal, but also the calf or lamb born from the animal, also the wool that accrued new value from the animal? That's a knas. Prove from here that that's Shitas Rabbi Meir. It's a knas. Igad Amri is an alternate version. Ha, loy boilon. This was not ever a question for us. Mida afech Rav, because Rav had an alternate version of the Mishnah. Vitani, and how did he teach the Mishnah? Gozel paravis kino. If somebody stole a cow and it got old, avodim vizkino, slaves, and then they got old, mishalom kishasik zela. He pays, in both cases, the value based on the time of the theft, when it was stolen. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rav is switching who says what. Both get paid, must be, the payment must be made, assessed at the value of the time of the theft. That is Shitas Rabbi Meir. Vechachamim omrim, the chachamim, they disagree, they say, Bavadim, by slaves, Omer lo, Rishol Chavanacha. He can give back the slave that's now older and say, here it is, this is yours. Guy says, hey, the slave is now on pension, not worth as much, can barely do anything for me. Too bad. Rishol Chavanacha. That's the Chachamim speaking. So, according to Rav, who switches it, Vadai the Reb Meir Shinukonim. Certainly, according to Reb Meir, the change affects an acquisition. And that's why Rabbi Meir says it's a kishasik zelo. Now he's the owner, and he's got to pay back to the victim at the assessment of value at the time of zelo. B'hacha knaso de kakanis le. And here, the reason why, by the case of stealing the para or the rachel, that he has to give back extra, is a knas. It's a fine. They shouldn't be Marviach, he shouldn't be chote niskar, gaining from his illicit activities. Hikoi boilon, so that's not a question. That's taken as a given based on Rav's switching of the girsa. Who says what? But what is a question? Hikoi boilon, hachi boilon, this is the question. Hikakonis b'mezid avashag b'shogig lokanis. When did they make a fine? When did Reb Meir say he has to pay and not retain any of the accrued value from the time of theft? Is that only true when the robber did so intentionally? But if it was unintentional, there is no fine. Odel mafil v'shogi namikonis. Or perhaps, even if he stole inadvertently, he also is fined and cannot keep any of the accrued value from the time of the inadvertent theft. Toshma, come in here, a proof to answer this question. Chamisha Govim min ha mechororin. There are five who collect from free properties, not sold.
Ve'elohim, and these are the five. Peros, payment of peros, of fruits. Shvach peros, and the accrued value of fruits, derivative. Ve'makabel lov lozen ben ishto, obas ishto, and somebody who accepts upon himself to sustain his wife's son or daughter. Veget chov, and a document, an instrument of debt. She'ein bo achrayas, that does not have achrayas, there's no documented payment associated with this debt, this bond. Uksuvas isha, she'ein bo achrayas, and also the requirement to pay ksuba that a man wrote for his wife, that doesn't have achrayas, any specific liability attached to it. These five things must be collected, these debts must be satisfied by mechurarin, from properties that are in possession of the one who is liable, and not from properties that have been sold. Let's see Rashi. Mina mechurarin, mina chosim b'nei charin, from properties that are free, below mina chosim mishabadim, and not properties that are leaned, that have an outstanding debt upon them. Peros, ushvach peros, fruits and the added value, derivative of peros. Tznam mesachas gittin, ein motzien lachilos peros, ushvach karkos, nechos mishabadim. Do not collect for the consumption of the fruits and the added value of the property from nechas mishabadim, from properties that have a shibud on them. This is in order to keep commerce going. The world should be sustained, established. That if you don't say that, then there's hefsel lekuchos. The one who bought the property is going to lose out. So we don't want the one who bought the property to be on the hook for these things. Achilas peres shvach kakos mefarsh lo b'shneim osim. We discussed over there. So, mina mechurarin means b'nei charin, just from properties that are free, held in possession of the one who owes this debt, and we're protecting lekuchos from liability for all these five things. If the person sold the property, so lekuchos, the purchaser is not liable to lose his property to satisfy these outstanding debts that the seller had. Get chov, shtar chov, a document that there's an outstanding debt. Shein bo achrayas, that doesn't have liability written into it. Shel shibud lo love b'shas halva, that the borrower did not present this property as eligible to satisfy the debt at the time the debt was initiated. As nechos lo kosov lo kol nechsai achrayin loch l'fro melvizim. He didn't say all of my assets are liable to pay for this. It was an unsecured loan. Lav, that's a back to the Gemara. Man shamasle, the Amar achrayas, lav tosofu. Rabbi Meir, who is the one who says that achrayas, presenting the property as subject to satisfy the debt, is not the mistake of the scribe, Rashi, Lapto Sofu, Ve'ein Agov Mechas Mishabadim, and therefore we don't say it's a scribal error, that it was omitted. And he will not, because it was not mentioned, so the lender will not be able to collect from these properties that were sold. Ve'lo Aminon Ein Lecha Adam Mava Mo'osov Ve'lo Shibud Nechse Love, and we don't say that nobody would be willing to lend his money in a manner that was unsecured, and it must be that the scribe made a mistake, and he just omitted that there is a satisfaction clause, that there's a lien on the property. But rather we say it's not there, This is an unsecured loan. And too bad, the guy lent his money without any security. And then when the buyer bought this property, so the borrower who is defaulting will not be able to say, you can satisfy the debt by this property. Of course, he would then still be on the hook to pay compensation to the purchaser of the property, but it won't put out the purchaser, because if you say that it's a tos, it's a mistake, you'll say that he will. It was just a scribal error, but there it is a secured loan. You say, no, lav tos sofer, it's not a mistake, and it is really an unsecured loan, then the purchaser will be able to maintain his property. Who is the one who says, achras lav tos sofer? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that it is not a scribal error, and it's an unsecured loan. Uktani, peres or shach peres, the fruits and the appreciation, shach peres, heridami, the appreciation of the fruits, what is the case? Kigon, shigazos sadim chavero. For example, a case when he stole a field from his friend, umachra la'acher, and he sold it to somebody else, vihishbicha, and it appreciated in value, he increased the value. Harehi yotza mitachas yado. Behold, it goes out from under the purchaser's hand. Keshuhu gove. When he collects, gove sekeren nechas mishibadim. So the purchaser will collect from the price of the property, that's the keren, from nechas mishibadim, from any properties that were owned prior by the Gazlan, Vesashevach, Menachas Necharin. But that which there was an appreciation of that property in the purchaser's hand, that he'll only collect from Necharin, only from the Gazlan's properties that he owns outright that were not sold. Da'asa Bal Ara, Vishalka Ara, Vishavche. The owner of the property takes the land and its increase. My lab amaretz. Are we not speaking about somebody who's unfamiliar with what's going on over here? The lo yado de kain gzelas o enin gzelas. He's not familiar with the status of the stealing of property, real property, if there's an acquisition or not. Afilo hachi kasi bal karka v'shalka la'ara ushvacha. And nonetheless, we say that the victim, the original owner of the land, takes his property together with the accrued value. Shma mina, shogin namikanis. This should be a proof for us that Rabbi Meir holds that even in a case where it was accidental, there is still a fine. He was not aware that he was engaging in theft. He didn't know karka in an exiles. So he knew he was engaging in a shady activity, it seems, but he didn't know that he was actually being a gazlan himself, because karkin and exiles. And yet, he gets a knas, he gets fined, that he has to give up the shevach, the accrued value, when it was by him. Amri lo, say there's no proof, v'lokeach tamachacha, v'yado. Talking about that the purchaser knew that karkin and exiles, and that he is actually becoming a thief over here. Not much of a Talmud Chacham, but he knew this din. And therefore, that's where there's a knas. There's no raya that, to answer our question, was Rabbi Meir including a knas when it was shogig as well? Not clear from this teaching. Toshma, coming here, a different proof. The tzav lo adam, tzav shacha, to paint, to dye the wood, the wool, red, to dye the wool red, and instead the artisan dyed it black, shachar tov adam, or the opposite, that the wool was given over to the artisan to dye black, and instead he dyed it red. So he deviated from what he was told to do. Rabbi Meir omer nosno d'met simro. Rabbi Meir says that the dyer has to make restitution for the value of the wool. He only has to give the value of the wool, but not the additional value of dyed wool. And if you'll say that in a case where it's inadvertent, that the theft was inadvertent, so there's also a fine that the thief cannot gain any illicit gains, then he should have the dyer should have to make restitution not only for the wool, but also the increased value for dyed wool. Rather, derived from here, that Reb Meir says there's a knas only when the person stole bishogeg, but not b'mezid. If it's mezid, he can keep the shevach. That's the conclusion. Rashi speaks out. Tzavu shogeg choshevle. Rashi is addressing a simple question. The guy intentionally deviated from what he was told to do. Why are you calling that a shogeg? Why is that called that he's stealing it by accident? Deika in Shetuva, because many people, the loyadi, they don't know. The also the shanas, bedibur shalbavais. You're not allowed to deviate from what the balbais said. The balbais brought in the wool, said dye it red. Many people think, I'll dye it black. What's the difference? He just wants it to be dyed. Or the other way. They don't realize that that's a shinui, that's a type of gzela. And it's called shogeg choshevle, even though they know it's not necessarily. It's not what the Balbai said. It's not Asisa Yashiva Tov. But they don't know that it's Asr. I mean, it's in. So therefore, it's called Shogeg. Interesting. Back in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Zeila Chazeres B'Eina. Rabbi Yehuda says that the stolen object goes back as it is. Rabbi Shimon Omer Ronosa Ki'ilu Hi Shuma Esla B'Kesef. Rabbi Shimon says it goes back. You view it as though it was assessed at its value in money. Both of them are saying less than Rabbi Meir says the accrued value, an increased value, also must be returned. They're saying not that. But as Rashi said, we're going to see what is the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Amar Rav Zvid, b'shevach shel gabi gzeilat mifugi. What are they arguing about? The additional value that is on the stolen item itself. That's where they argue. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, the Dinzel Havi. Rabbi Yehuda holds, that belongs to the victim. That has to go back. Rabbi Shimon Savar, the Gazlan Havi. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says that actually, even though it's on the stolen animal, but the accrued value is a gain that accrues to the robber. That's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, according to Rav Zvid. Rav Papa disagrees and explains the machlokas. The kuliyamo shevach shal gabig zela de gazlan hadi. Everybody agrees that the additional value that is on the stolen item is owned by the robber. V'ha'cha the metzal shish l'vriyak miflagi. And here, what do they disagree about? The question of half, a third, or a quarter. How much do we view as being subject to restitution? Half, a third, or a quarter? They disagree. Rashi says, let's see, Rashi. Metzal shlish rviya. Kederech minig amadina l'mekabli behemus l'ashbichan l'zman gadol kazeh. What is the custom in the land for those who take the animals to increase their value for a long time? The guy stole it for 6 months, for a year, 2 years, however long he took it. So if somebody brings a calf to a farmer and says, I'll give it to you to pasture in your land for 2 years, they're going to make an agreement. We'll split it half-half, a third, a quarter, whatever the general custom is in that place, based on the subject to the value of the land and how much can be achieved with it. There's going to be different deals. So that value that would be paid, that's to somebody to do that, the Gazlan gets to that extent. Meaning he has contributed like a person who's growing the animal by him. So you can deduct from what needs to be returned. How much does he get? According to the minig of the Medina for Mekabli Behemos. Rabbi Savar, Shavach Shal Gabi, Gzela, Kule de Gazlim. Rabbi says, all of the accrued value goes to the robber, the Gazlan Havi. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Lematzo Shishrabia, Huda Shakil Gazlan. And Rabbi Shimon says that the Gazlan takes, in accordance with parallel cases, the Gazlan is as though he's Mekabel Behemo, that he gets to take a third, a quarter, a half, whatever the custom in the land is, for those that raise animals and take a share of the profit. Tana, Gazal Para, Minas Abratzlo, Rav Mishnah, somebody stole a cow and it became pregnant by him, V'yolda, and it gave birth, Racha, Benitana Etzla, V'gazaza, and if he stole a lamb, and then the wool grew after he stole it by him, and then he sheared it, Mishalan Kishasa Gzela, he has to pay like the value at the time when it was stolen. Yolda in, lo yolda, hadubayne. The diak is that if it gave birth, that's the case. But if it did not give birth, he returns it as it is. Ready to give birth? Much more valuable. Bishlam the Rav Zvid. This goes well according to Rav Zvid. Dama, shevach shal gabi gzela, de nigzel havi. That he holds Rabbi Yehuda. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, the accrued value that is on the item that was stolen, that actually accrues to the victim. Hamani Rabbi Yehuda, then this Mishnah will be in accord with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. That's why if it hasn't given birth, it goes back. That's the item itself. So now it's worth more. It's about to give birth. So what? That accrued to the Nigzal, the victim. Elul Rav Papa, but according to Rav Papa, the Gazlan Havi, according to Rav Papa, everybody agrees. I say everybody. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, they agree that it goes back to, that it accrues, the additional value accrues to the robber, the Gazlan Havi. How money? So who could be saying this? Lo Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo Rabbi Shimon. And it's obviously not Rabbi Meir, who says that all the Shevach has to go back, as a knas we saw. But who is saying this? It can't be Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon. So it's a kasha. Corner of Papa. Amalchar of Papa. Hu adin afil lo yolda nami. Rav Papa will tell you, the halach applies also. Don't make that diak. Don't make that diak. Even if it has not given birth, still, how does he give back? Kishasak zeyla hu d'mishalim. He pays back at the value at the time when it was stolen, which is less. He's not just going to give back the animal. Basheru sham, now ready to give birth, more valuable. V'ha ditani yolda. Ah, what do you do? Why don't you make a diak? Mishnah said, if it gave birth. Ayda nasiv reisha yolda, nasiv sevanam yolda. Since the reisha mentioned that it gave birth, the beginning of the Mishnah, that it gave birth, so to the seifa fell into line, the same parallel case. Also it gave birth. But don't make the diak. Tanya kavase der papa. We have a braisa supporting Rav Papa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ro'enosa ki'ilu hi shuma etzlo, b'kesef, l'metzlo lishlish rabia. We have a support for Rav Papa, a braisa that supports this assertion that has Rabbi Shimon learned, that it accrues, the value of the shevach accrues to the robber, the gazlan, as he get, based on the minig ben dina, either half, a third, or a quarter.